Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a huge announcement to make. I am sick of snow and cold weather. Man, I feel like it's so cold. I feel like I have undescended testicles, man. I'm sick of this. I have cabin fever. My kids are going crazy. I can bundle them up. I can throw them outside for maybe 15 minutes at a time, and then they say they're cold and they want to come inside. This is basically just me bitching at this point, but I have this little space heater in my little office here, and it's working OT, man. It's hard keeping up with this cold temps, and I see 30s in the forecast for next week, and that put a little smile on my face. Hopefully some of the snow gets knocked down. I know it's not going to just all of a sudden up and melt. We'd have huge problems at that point, but I will say this, I'm ready for shed hunting, and I honestly don't know when shed hunting is going to be possible with all this snow on the ground. I know that on the farm that I hunt close to my house, it's, you know, 18 inches of snow on the ground. Even down home, we're dealing with a lot of ice and a lot of snow. So I might not be putting on the miles like I usually do. A lot of that's just going to depend on when the snow melts. And I hope it melts before shed rally. I mean, that's really only 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away, but I have a feeling it's not going to happen. So I'll be doing a little shed hunting in the snow. What I don't want is to make plans for a shed hunt, and then like 2 days, 3 days before, we get another like 3 or 4 inches of snow, and then I don't get to do any shed hunting at all. And then all the sheds just get chewed up. Right. And if I do find them, there'll be old sheds from the previous year or whatever. Anyway, I'm just complaining at this point. But we do have a really good episode today. Despite all my bitching, we have a really good episode today. Today, we're going to be talking with active duty Army. I think it is artillery soldier. I don't even know. He says what he is in the podcast, but active duty Army, Frank Worsham. And he's going to talk a little bit about where he's hunted kind of all over the United States based off of where he's been stationed, right? We talk about things like hunting on military bases, different opportunities that the military, you know, we've talked about this before on other podcasts, but different opportunities that active and vets get, you know, throughout the United States for tags and licenses. We talk about what it's like to not being able to hunt while he was stationed in Afghanistan. We talk about some of his favorite states to hunt. We talk about Alaska, Oklahoma, Texas, Ohio, Hawaii, of all places, and North Carolina, where he's currently stationed. So it's another really interesting podcast from a member of our hunting community. And this member of our hunting community just happens to be active duty military. So huge shout out to Frank for serving this country as well. So before we get into today's podcast, though, we're going to do it's commercial time, right? It's this time that I dedicate to the people who pay me money to advertise their products. But it's a little bit more than that, right? Just like our title sponsor, Vortex Optics, man, I've come to know some of these people and they've become friends of mine. Really great people, and people, you know, products, you have to have a product to stand behind, but the people that work for a company have to be intelligent. They have to be knowledgeable. They have to be friendly. They have to understand the customer, not only their wants and their needs, but their problems as well. So I just love working with the guys from Vortex Optics, and they back it up with a VIP warranty that is I feel like starting to become a little bit more common, but these guys were doing it. These guys are the OGs of this VIP warranty. And that is, I don't know about you, but I beat the shit out of my equipment when I hunt, right? I'm pretty hard on it. Whether I'm climbing up a mountain or, you know, crawling through some grass, spotting and stalking, or, you know, like throwing it in my bag and then throwing my gear in my truck and then letting it set there and then pulling it back out. And I hope everything works okay. And I've had my binoculars for several years from Vortex, and they've been broken on two separate occasions because I'm hard on my equipment. And the VIP warranty is you send it into them, they fix it, and then they send it back to you, no charge to you. So that's again, just another checkbox that's filled in when just buying products from Vortex Optics. So go check out vortexoptics.com, spotting scopes, range finders, binoculars, rifle scopes, all the good stuff. Second company we're talking about today, Wasp Archery. And honestly, another American company that produces some badass products, broadheads that at this point in time, I've been using them for a very long time, well before the podcast even started. So it's awesome working with a brand that I'm very comfortable and confident with. And I get that with, I've gotten that over the years with Wasp. And it's what's awesome now is now knowing again the people within the company and getting to know about how their products are built, the material that they use. It just even makes me more confident in their products. And I don't, it sucks to say, but I don't really see myself wanting to shoot another broadhead. Now I know that's relative because there's all broadheads. If you put it through the lungs and the heart, they're going to kill an animal, but I don't know, something about Wasp, man. It's almost nostalgic with all the deer that I've killed using their heads over the years. So Wasp has fixed blades. They have mechanicals. And my favorite is the Boss 4-blade for a fixed blade and the Jackhammer for an expandable. Go check it out, wasparchery.com. And that's the commercials, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get into today's episode. It's like a BS session, but it's so much more than that. Frank Worsham, here we go. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Frank Worsham. Frank, how we doing, man?
Doing great, brother. Doing great.
Yeah. Are you really doing great, though? Because I got cabin fever straight up right now. I need for this freaking snow to melt so I can just, like, go outside.
Well, I mean, to tell you the truth, though, I'm in North Carolina, so I ain't got to worry about the snow where I'm at. I'm out by Fayetteville at Fort Bragg, so the weather's not too shabby for me. I've been able to get out and do a little bit of shed hunting and do some hiking, really, for upcoming elk hunt this summer or this fall.
Gotcha. So you don't have any snow restrictions right now, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Clear ground.
That's a good thing. What's the temperature out there today?
Right now, I think it's 56 outside right now.
I mean, I don't even know what that's like. Today's like the first, today's the first day of sunshine in like 15 days. It's been those, it's just like that overcast. We have about 18, maybe 2 feet worth of snow on the ground. And if not more, it's, I think right now in Iowa, it is 4 degrees out right now. So like, I wish you could see me right now because I'm in my little office that I made in my loft above my garage. And I typically at about 25 degrees, 30 degrees, the space heater keeps up great. It's not running the whole time, but with these temps outside and my, I would have to mark it up to some of my shoddy construction that when I built this office, that sucker is running all day long just to try to keep up with it. And if I shut it off even for a night, it takes almost a whole day to warm the whole office back up again. So it's wow. This whole Honeywell is getting a workout.
You're getting your money's worth out of that one.
That's right. Well, you reached out to me a while ago. Yep. And you were like, hey man, I'm active duty military. You're currently active duty, right?
I am, yes.
Yep, currently active duty. And here's a list of states that I've hunted. And I found that pretty interesting because it really is a wide variety of states, you know, from Alaska to Texas to Ohio, North Carolina, where else? Oklahoma. Where else am I missing?
Oklahoma, Hawaii.
Hawaii.
I've done some New Mexico. Yeah, I mean, all you got in Hawaii is some goats, some sheep, and hogs. But, you know, got to keep on the up and up with the bow. So
yeah,
do what you can.
Yeah.
I've gone New Mexico, Colorado, and I've got an upcoming Utah hunt.
Oh, nice.
For elk this year. So
nice. Cool. All right. So man, I don't even know where to start really. Let's start here. When did you join the military?
So I joined the military right after college. I've been in for 12 years now.
Okay. And how old are you?
I am 35, 36, somewhere in that range. I always forget my age, man.
That's all good.
I think I just turned 36 last month. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Why did you go to the military after college, not before college?
So my plan was to actually go before college. And I had a friend of mine that was in the military. He told me about some scholarship opportunities. And so that's what I ended up doing. I pursued those and I got offered a 4-year scholarship for the Army. You know, so I went to school, completed my school. I owed them 7 years whenever I got done with that, you know, for some other stuff as well. And, you know, I really enjoyed the Army and I don't see myself getting out anytime soon. So,
okay, cool. So you think you're going to do this, lifer deal?
Yeah. I mean, that's the plan right now, man. Take it one day at a time, you know, right. Plans change. You know, God has a plan for everybody, but right now, you know, it looks like at least 20 years. So.
Gotcha. So the contract was, we'll pay for your school, but you owe us some time.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, that's one way to get college paid for all the way.
Yeah.
Once you got out of college, now you go to, you start, you know, I don't know, your contract, the time that, you know, you promised the government. Where did you go for basic? What did they have you doing? Where did you travel to?
Yep. So I'm field artillery. I went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Unfortunately, I was there and left prior to deer season, just because Fort Sill, Oklahoma, you know, if you ever get the chance to go out with a military guy to go hunt that, by all means, definitely do it. That's an amazing, amazing spot. Some of my buddies will get mad at me for saying that. Tell them the world our secret. But from there, I went up to Alaska. I mean, every hunter's dream, right?
Right.
So I got to spend 2 out of 3 years in Alaska. The other year I was deployed there. But Alaska was phenomenal. I took my bow. I think I just kept it in my truck all the time. You know, I got to kill a black bear up there, a moose, a caribou. I went grizzly bear hunting with my bow, or brown bear because it was by the coast, but no luck on that one. But I left from Alaska, went back to Oklahoma. I got to deer hunt there a little bit, and then went to Hawaii. I did the pig and the sheep hunting there. Went back to Oklahoma again, and got to do some deer hunting there for a few seasons, and then made it out to North Carolina. And that's where I am now. The other hunts I've done, you know, I've just kind of sprinkled in as I've been going around. So.
Gotcha. So where are you from originally then?
Originally from West Texas.
West Texas. Okay. All right. Yep. So, was just based off where you're from, then that's why you kept coming back to Oklahoma. Is that because based off of where you're living, is Oklahoma the base where like you did your basic and everything?
Well, you just kind of go wherever the Army tells you.
Yeah.
And because I'm field artillery, that's the home of the artillery is at Fort Sill, Oklahoma there.
Gotcha.
So I've had more opportunity to go there than just about anywhere else. And, you know, it's worked out for me because I really enjoy hunting on that post. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So let me ask you this. You know, you just said it right there. The military tells me what to do and I go do it type of deal.
Yep.
While you're stationed, you know, at these places like Hawaii and Alaska and Oklahoma and whatnot, you know, obviously your responsibility to the military comes first, but how much time throughout the year or the hunting season do you actually get to get out and sit in a tree stand or a ground blind and chase game?
Man, so it varies dramatically, depending on what unit you're with. And where they're at in the process of getting ready to deploy, you know, coming back from deployment, it just kind of depends on, we call it op tempo, but operational tempo of the unit. So if we're getting ready to deploy, you know, you can imagine that's a whole lot of training and not a whole lot of hunting time.
Yeah.
So we're spending most of the weekends, most of the nights out in the field. You know, if we're coming back from deployment, it's kind of a reset, relax time. You get a lot more family time. You know, I have the ability to go hunt during those times as well. It's hard. Honestly, it's hard to hunt in the military, you know, just because of a lot of our free time is eaten up with certain things, and it's hard to take leave during certain points. And sometimes though, you can line those things up and just, you know, get your magic window. And, some years I'm fortunate enough to be able to hunt, you know, probably 50 to 60 days a year. And other years I'm down into the 10 to 15 day range. You know, it really just depends.
Gotcha. So I asked this question to, I don't know, I've had a conversation with a pro athlete before, or even college athletes, or some people who maybe have an injury and it kept them from hunting for a season or two, or, you know, active duty military that get deployed. You know, when you were deployed and, you know, maybe when I say deployed, were you deployed overseas at all?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So when you were overseas, in different countries and maybe didn't make hunting season for a year, what was that like?
Honestly, you know, time goes by a little differently over there. So there was so much stuff to focus on there. I didn't get a whole lot of time to focus on, the hunting season and things like that back home. The time that I did have away from that mindset, you know, I needed to focus on family and that kind of stuff. You know, there was obviously a lot of things that I missed about hunting, and I would make it a point to, you know, ensure I'm still putting in for draws just so I can get, you know, preference points and things of that nature. But other than that, you know, if I had a little bit of downtime, I was doing some e-scouting for future hunts. But outside of that, there wasn't a whole lot of, in a combat zone, at least, there's not a whole lot of time to, you know, devote to external things, you know what I mean? Now I have been sent to countries where I haven't been in a combat zone. And during those times, I focus a lot more on e-scouting. And it actually is kind of beneficial because I'm away from the house, away from some of the duties that I have to do as a father and a husband. And I can devote some of that extra free time to, you know, planning an upcoming hunt, or thinking about, hey, you know, should I put in for this draw, you know, or things of that nature.
Yeah. Okay. So where were you deployed?
Afghanistan.
Okay. So when you were, when you were in Afghanistan, I mean, you were in the thick of it, right? I mean, you were in, like, when you say active war zone type scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was out living on a cop, and, you know, we had less than 100 people there with us. I mean, we were up to it a couple times.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this. Do you have, and I know this is just because I'm curious, but did you have any like close calls or any scary moments that you'd like to share with us while you were deployed?
I mean, honestly, I had a few of them, but it wasn't anything like some of my brothers have had to go through. So, I don't really have any major stories to, you know, toot my own horn. There's a lot of guys that have had to go through far worse than I did. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this, because there's a lot of organizations, out there that help, you know, military, guys find hunting, you know, opportunities throughout, you know, or introduce, vets or active duty people, to the, the world of hunting, you know, to help, combat, some kind of PTSD or anything like that. Did you ever find that when you got back from deployment that, hunting was almost like a therapy for you to like decompress from active duty?
Without a doubt, 150%. So I actually, so before I joined the Army and before I started to, deploy and see that side of the military, I've always hunted for fun. I've hunted ever since I was probably 5 years old. I've deer hunted or, some sort of hunting every year. Whenever I came back from my deployment, like you can ask my wife, I was just a changed man. I acted differently. And now I view my time in the woods, whether I'm alone or with my kids or with my wife, like that is 100% therapeutic for me. There's nothing that can quite reset me, like getting out in the woods, sitting still in a stand or hiking up a mountain, whatever it may be. But just getting out there, getting out in nature.
Yeah. So, I mean, I take it that if this is something that if there's any, guys who may be struggling getting back to normal or are just looking for something, because I've also heard, and maybe you can fill me in on this, that, once somebody has been in the military for a long time, right, and they try to get back to the civilian lifestyle without the structure, let's say, of the military, it can be difficult for people to find balance in the world. Would you recommend that hunting, fishing, the outdoors would be something to help them kind of find structure to balance their life out?
Yeah, without a doubt. In the military, it's just like, being institutionalized, basically. It's a whole different lifestyle. And if you spend long enough in that lifestyle and you come out, you have to readjust your entire life to match what, is going on in the civilian populace at the time. There's a lot of that stuff that we don't see just because we're gone so much. And there can be a lot of good things to come out of finding something to focus on to have that therapeutic reset, so that guys don't get so tensed up all the time, because it's kind of what happens to, a lot of people that come out of the military. Some things just set them off a little bit more, so they have to, find that little bit of zen and hold on to it. And for me, and I think for most of, most active duty people are outdoor oriented type of guys, and, just getting out hunting, fishing, for me personally, it's all around hunting. Everything evolves around hunting for my therapy. So yeah. I would highly recommend it. And I've taken a few, taken a few other active duty military guys out that have never hunted before, and, introduced them to a new sport that they turned out loving,
Yeah.
It's very therapeutic. So,
yeah, absolutely. So you've kind of been all over the place, in regards to, hunting. You've hunted in kind of the Southeast, you've hunted in the West, you've hunted in the Midwest, extreme places like Alaska and Hawaii. Do you have one that is heads and toes above the rest when it comes to your favorite places to hunt?
Well, I mean, I'm going to throw out the obvious here, and that's Alaska.
Yeah.
There is nothing like Alaska. It's the wildest, like most dangerous place I've ever been. You can step out half a mile behind your house and you can be in the most wilderness place that is hard to come by in the lower 48, the contiguous 48. Alaska definitely takes the cake on that.
Why is that?
I'll be honest. Well, so it's hard to describe the beauty of Alaska.
Yeah.
So you can just be sitting up on a mountaintop, see a moose, a mile and a half down the valley to your left hand side, and you look over to the right, and then, here's a wolf or something else that's coming over the saddle, coming over the ridge, there's nothing quite like that. The peace and serenity that's there in Alaska, and just the landscape itself is so gorgeous. To me, that was by far my favorite. If I had to pick a second, it would be Oklahoma. And it pains me to say Oklahoma being from Texas, because I'm a Longhorns guy. But without a doubt, it would be Oklahoma. It's just, it's a hidden gem. It's a secret that, you know, most of your whitetail hunters are going to go to Iowa and Kansas, or, you know, even Ohio or Indiana, things like that. Missouri now is a big one, but Oklahoma's got some great deer hunting there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when it comes to Oklahoma, the cat's already out of the bag based off of some of the deer that are coming out of that state in the past, you know, 4 years. So I think, what was it, like 2018 or 19, they had the most 200 inch deer shot out of any state in the lower 48. So, the cat's out of the bag about Oklahoma, man. being from, you know, you said East Texas or West Texas, or where you're from?
West Texas.
Okay. So, you're from Texas, and that kind of hunting style, you know, based off what I've heard and based off my experiences, is just completely different to the way the rest of the, country hunts. Is that accurate to say, or did you have a different view?
No, I would 100% agree with that statement. You know, and it has a lot to do with too, whenever I was younger growing up, my dad is a you know, obviously I follow in his footsteps, and he's the one that taught me to hunt. And he was very much like, you know, you're going to go to this tree and you're going to sit here, you know, and this is the tree that you're going to pick before the day starts. And there's a corn pile that's 100 yards away, and we're just going to sit and watch over the top of this corn pile. So whenever I started going other places that you couldn't bait to hunt, I was like, how am I supposed to hunt this? And then I can't put corn out here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
But I really started, you know, diving into a lot more of the tactics of hunting, and really it grew my love for the sport, to be honest.
That's awesome. So, was it after college before you hunted any other states, or when was the first time you hunted outside of the state of Texas?
So that would have been during college. I went on, and it was strictly elk was the only other thing I had hunted outside of the state of Texas. I'd never went whitetail hunting outside of the state of Texas, or any other kind of hunting other than just elk, and I guess pheasant. I went pheasant hunting one time outside of the state of Texas. Otherwise, everything was done in Texas until after I left for college, or until after I left college.
Got ya. And what was that first whitetail hunt outside of Texas?
So that would have been in Oklahoma.
Okay.
The terrain was fairly similar in Oklahoma as to where I grew up, at least where I was hunting in Oklahoma, as to where I grew up in West Texas. The terrain was fairly similar. But because I was also hunting on a military post there, so there was a lot of added rules and regulations I had to abide by. But of course, one of them was no baiting.
Yeah.
So I think I spent probably the first half of the season trying to figure out, you know, the lay of the land, how the deer were using it to move around. And so I spent a lot of time on top of little hilltops and little mountainsides and just watching deer there.
Yeah.
And learned a lot from doing that. So.
Okay. How is hunting a military base different from, let's just say, what I'm doing, where I may have like a private farm or a lease or a chunk of public?
Yeah. So, the biggest thing is that it is first and foremost military land. So if there's a unit that wants to use that land to train on it, you know, they have full access to it. Other than that, it's fairly similar to public land. You know, you're not allowed to, with the exception of, you're not allowed to set up cell cameras or any kind of trail cameras or anything like that on military land. They just don't want, you know, pictures of things going on.
Yeah.
But other than that, most military bases are subdivided into smaller units. And so, you check out a single unit. And sometimes you have to check them out, you know, days in advance. Sometimes you can check them out that day. But typically, if you're bow hunting, you'll have a lot more access to different areas across the,
post than you will if you're rifle hunting.
Okay. So you have a little bit more access with the bow.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yep.
All right. So earlier you were saying that your buddies might get mad at you for talking about this, but out at this Oklahoma military base that you were hunting in, they got some good quality deer there.
They have some phenomenal deer there. So you mentioned earlier, 2018 or 19, whatever the year was, that there was a bunch of 200-inch class deer that came out of Oklahoma. I believe it was 2018. There was I want to say it was 236-inch deer that came off of Fort Sill. Just a monster. And I've been there and witnessed probably 4 to 5 deer seasons, and I've seen a handful of 180, 190-inch plus deer every year get taken out of there.
Dang. How many acres is that?
I believe it's close to 500,000.
Oh, geez.
No, I'm sorry. That's not right. That's a different place. It's 100,000 for Fort Sill.
Okay, still 100,000 acres. Now, yeah. Just out of curiosity, do deer that are taken out of that facility, can they be entered into a record book, or is that considered kind of like a high fence area?
I'd be 100% honest with you. I don't really know.
Okay.
I would imagine it's probably considered a high fence area just because there is a high fence that goes around it.
Yeah.
But they do have their own wildlife biologist there, and they run kind of their own show.
Gotcha.
I really don't know for sure.
Yeah. I don't know how well it's managed, now, but there was an ammunitions plant base, you know, that I don't think they make ammunition there anymore, but they did back for like World War II and Vietnam and stuff, you know, times like that, big conflicts. And it had a high fence around it. And I'm not sure how many acres it was, but they had, crops in it and deer in it and all, it was a enclosed. And I'm pretty sure that if you shoot a deer within that facility or that area, it does not count for any type of record books or anything like that. But it's not like there's no feeders, there was no bait piles. I mean, there was no wildlife biologist, as far as I know, that was really managing the farm. It was just like when they put the fences up around it, there were deer already in it. You know what I mean? And it's not like they let deer in and let deer go. You know, some of the creeks have undercrossings, and deer can kind of come in and out of it. It's not like really secure, you know what I mean? So, that's just what I've heard. But anyway, so you got some really good hunting opportunities there. Have you ever had encounters with like on some of these military bases, just some mammoth deer?
Oh yeah. We have these every military base, well, 90% of them anyways, will have some sort of an impact area where they can shoot artillery into, which is, obviously there's some dud munitions out there, so you're not allowed to walk into this area, nor would you really want to, even if you could. But the deer know exactly where that line is, and there'll be some monsters sitting right on the edge of that line. And I've been within, about 60 yards of one of them before, as I was standing pretty close to the line, just praying that he would walk another 20 yards in my direction so I could fling an arrow at him. But, he knew exactly where that line was, and he stayed over on the other side.
So he's risking getting shot with a mortar, and then getting shot with an arrow.
Yep.
That's crazy. Like I don't know how accurate this is, but I just envision guys just shooting, this artillery and these mortars, and they're just exploding and just like 50 yards away, like right inside safe zone. These deer are just hanging out, listening to these explosions all day long.
Yeah. And that's, so we are required to scan the area and make sure there's no wildlife in there whenever we shoot and things of that nature. And then if we do see an animal or whatever walk into the area that we're shooting at, we have to cease fire.
Okay.
So, you know, those animals, they just, they know that. And they've been in there for years, you know. Most of the animals in there are your older, much more mature deer. They just know they can hang there. And if they want to make their face known, they know that the firing is going to stop.
Yeah.
You know.
That's crazy. Man, that's crazy. All right. So, so now you're in North Carolina, correct?
Yes.
Right. So I've heard a mixed reviews about the state of North Carolina. Now, do you hunt on a military base now, or do you go out into the, I guess, the civilian world and hunt on public or private?
So I've hunted both public here and on Fort Bragg,
okay,
the military post.
Okay. So is the military base better or the same as outside of the fence?
Most of the time I will say that the military post has better hunting than the local public. However, here at Fort Bragg, I would say it's almost the opposite. It's almost that Fort Bragg has worse hunting than some of the public I've found here. It's just because of the sheer number of people that can hunt on Fort Bragg.
Gotcha. Well, I've also heard, you know, from people out that, you know, hunt the North and South Carolina type terrain out there, and that North Carolina isn't as, you're not going to come to North Carolina and shoot booners like you would in Iowa, let's just say, bigger deer, but they have a good quantity of deer. That's what I've heard. Is that true?
Yeah, I would say that the numbers of deer are pretty good if you can find the little pocket that they're at. And for me personally, it was hard transitioning to North Carolina because I've never hunted. I call this big woods, you know, tall pine trees, and it's nothing but pine trees just about as far as you can see.
Yeah.
Unless you hit a creek and have some oaks in there. I've never hunted pine flats like that. So it was a major shift for me in how to hunt. And once I've found some pockets of deer though, you know, I would say the deer numbers here are pretty good. But there's a lot of desolated areas just in the middle of those ponds too.
Yeah. Okay. So Hawaii, right? I've never been to Hawaii, but I've interviewed a guy here on the podcast who went, he took his wife on vacation to Hawaii, and I think she did some kind of spa day, and he went into the hills with some local guy who had, you know, some pit bulls and handed him a knife, and they went and basically chased down a wild boar and stabbed it. And that's the hunting that he did when he was out there. But, you know, through social media and some of these videos, you see that they have some sika deer. They also have some like wild goats and obviously hogs and whatnot. But when you were in Hawaii, what did you shoot?
So I got a hog and I got a goat on the main island there on Oahu. I was never fortunate enough to be able to go over to the Big Island to do some of the axis deer hunts or some of the sheep hunts, but it's on a future bucket
deer,
list.
That's right.
It's on a future bucket list if I ever get the opportunity to go back. So
gotcha. So, you know, most people don't think, right, like, oh, let's go bow hunting in Hawaii. Right. But it, you know, obviously there's animals there to hunt. So, you know, you can hunt them with whatever you know, a bow or a gun or whatever. But, what was that experience like? I mean, how different was it than, let's just say, bow hunting in Oklahoma?
Yeah. So the seasons are completely different there. It's been a number of years since I've hunted Hawaii, but the, it's hogs. So just like most places, hogs are pretty much open season for the most part. And you're doing hunting in short sleeve shirts and shorts and sometimes flip flops. I think I went in flip flops one time. you know, it's 85 degrees outside. And so I'm trying not to sweat as I'm walking around through the woods. And
I believe one time I was hog hunting, and there was a group of, you know, 10 or 15 locals that came walking right by me and went to the spring that I was hunting over, and they just started swimming around in the spring. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go and move over here now, I guess.
That's crazy, man. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, were you able, from where you were at hunting, were you able to like see the ocean and hear like the ocean while you were hunting?
So whenever I went goat hunting, there on Oahu, I could. So I was up on the side of the mountain there, and, you know, we would hike 10 or 15 minutes up the edge of the mountain, get out of breath, and just sit down and start looking out and watching the waves crash on the shore, you know, a mile and a half or so away, and regain some composure, get back up and keep walking, trying to find the goats again. So
nice.
You know, that's a very interesting dynamic to a hunt.
Yeah. So did you eat what you shot out there?
I did. I've, you know, ever since I was a young guy, my dad's always pounded into me that, you know, if you're going to kill it, you're going to take the time to kill it, you need to eat it. So I've eaten every animal that I've killed. I may not have finished the whole animal, I will say that. But I've at least tried it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. I definitely, my wife, she's gung-ho about going to Hawaii at some point in her life. And if I go, I'm going to schedule her, like, I don't know, maybe a 24-hour massage or some time alone so I can go out and maybe do like a 2-day bow hunt or something like that. I think that would be really definitely at least something different. Right. And I mean, how cool would it be to say, dude, I bow hunted in Hawaii once.
Yep. Yep.
So, all right.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that. I get down to, go down to the Big Island, 'cause that's where most of those, that's where the good hunting is. So you get some good sized sheep out there and the axis deer and all that stuff. That's what I'd recommend doing.
Gotcha. All right. So you also, you said like this year you are applying, or you've already applied, or you're getting a tag for Utah.
Yep. Yeah. I'm going to go, Utah elk hunt. I'm just doing it over the counter this year. So we found there's a couple of different, any bull areas out there for archery, and that's where we're going to go.
Okay. And, how many years have you, let me back up a second. When you go on these Western trips, right? I mean, does the military give you vacation time, or because you're active duty, is this all like leave time? Like you have to schedule this hunt on a leave?
Yeah, it's all scheduled on leave dates. And so I have to, you know, make sure that my unit is not doing anything, you know, within a certain time frame, schedule my leave, get that approved, and then I can look for hunts that then match that same time frame. Because I've had some friends that have, you know, scheduled the hunt and the tickets and everything else, and then tried to get their leave approved, and it's gotten denied. So they've had to eat a plane ticket and whatever else. It's definitely tricky. But if you get, you know, if you're able to lock down some dates, then you have to spend the time at that point to find either an outfitter or, you know, create time that works for you to match up those dates.
Yeah. So what happens when, I don't know, the schedule just says that, hey man, you know, maybe September and October, there's going to be no leave time, or, you know, your leave time falls on a different time a year other than hunting season.
So the way the military works is you're giving leave days, you're given 30 days a year, and you can use them whenever you see fit, provided the unit is not doing anything.
Gotcha.
So I just save all my leave time for fall.
Got
and
it.
Use it all then.
Okay. Yep. So it is a little bit like PTO per se, like you, those 30 yep. days are yours to schedule however you want to schedule.
Yep.
Okay, cool. And now do you have to use them as like in big chunks? Do you have to use them like Okay, well, we're going to give you 30 days, but the minimum you can take off is 5 days. So when you take off, you have to take off five, and you can't go more than 10. Like, or could you say, well, I'm going to take 30 straight days off and hunt, you know, the last 2 weeks of October and the first 2 weeks of November every day, every year?
So you can use them however you want. Once you hit 30 days or more, the approval process is a little different. It has to go up higher up the chain of command. You know, you've got to get other people to sign off on you taking that much time. But you can use them however you want, and you can accrue up to 90 days. Well, it changes, right now with COVID. It's up to 120 days, right now with COVID, but, well, typically it's 60 days and 90 days after a deployment. They give you that extra 30-day buffer there because obviously you haven't been able to spend any leave on deployment.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So, man, it just sounds like even though you've really dedicated all this time to the military, they give you ample opportunities to, you know, get out and hunt. My next question is do you take advantage of any opportunities? And the reason I ask this is because, I don't know, it's been, I think last month or maybe the month before, I had some guy, an active duty military, a guy come on the podcast and talk about all the different opportunities as far as tags and license availability to those who are active. Like you can get lifelong, hunting licenses for dirt cheap, you know, like, tags that may be difficult to get if you were just a civilian. Those might be opened up to active military or even discounted tags.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I try and take it as much advantage of that as I can. The trouble is finding them. So there's not like a go-to spot. And, you know, whenever you're in the military, you can't go to somewhere and say, okay, show me everything that you know, has a military tag that I can figure out. So you've really got to do your research. You've got to go to all the state different state websites and figure out if they have a military license of some kind, you know, whether that's you can apply for resident hunting licenses or if they have some sort of special license. Ohio, for example, one of the reasons why I go and hunt Ohio is because as long as I'm on leave, all I have to do is pay for the deer tag and my license fee is covered.
So you don't have to even buy a license?
Correct.
Okay. So basically all you have to do, like a DNR officer stops you, you just whip out your active military ID.
So you have to be on leave.
Yep.
So I have to show them that leave form.
Okay.
Show them my military ID and show them my deer tag so that I have the actual tag as well.
Gotcha. Man, that's awesome. Right. So what's a deer tag cost for active military?
I don't really remember off the top of my head. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 bucks. I think it wasn't very much
as active duty. Now that's probably, the resident fee. If I had to guess, I'm guessing you're paying what a resident, what the residents pay. But if it was a non-resident, they probably pay a little bit more.
Yeah, that's correct.
So
yeah, I believe it was the resident fee cost.
Yeah, definitely. Any active military guys who are listening to this, that's definitely something you should take advantage of if you're a serious hunter. So what are you looking forward to in 2021, man?
So 2021, I mean, obviously I've got my elk hunt coming up that I'm really looking forward to. But this will be my second season here at Fort Bragg. So I'm really looking forward to some just absolute monsters that I ended up seeing, and, you know, monsters for the North Carolina area that, you know, to me are just great deer, you know, in the 140-ish class range.
Yeah.
Really looking to being able to close in on them a little bit more. I was able to, between the tail end of deer season and some of the scouting I've done so far, you know, I've been able to close in on about three of them that I'm really looking forward to meeting them again at some point in September with my bow. So
awesome, man. Any other states this year other than that elk hunt out west? Oh, are you going back to Ohio as well?
Yeah, I'll definitely be going back to Ohio. I might be going back up to Alaska to do a few days for a moose hunt. I've maintained my residency up there, so I've been going back there every 2 years, and we'll either do some salmon fishing or a moose hunt every other year. So I'm not sure if we're going to be doing the salmon fishing or the moose hunt this year, but we'll figure it out.
So currently, you claim Alaska as your home state?
Correct.
Man, that's another benefit of the military, man. That's crazy.
Yep.
Dude, I
get to put in for the resident draws every year.
Man, that's crazy. I got a buddy, a guy I know who I think he said that Alaska residents have access to somewhere like 54 different tags throughout the entire year, like caribou, sheep, brown bear, mountain goats, moose, Sitka deer, so many different opportunities up there. Sounds like you're trying to take advantage of some of those as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Trying to take as much advantage of that as I can.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and just BS with us for a little bit. First off, thank you very much for your service. Really appreciate that. And second, good luck in this upcoming season, man.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much for the support. I do have to throw out a little plug real quick for just all the military members. We really appreciate whenever people go out of their way just to say thank you to us. It means a lot to us. So I want to say thank you for doing that. And thank you to everybody else that thanks the service member.
Huge shout out to Frank, man, not only for being active military, but being, part of this community as well, taking time out of his day to hop on and chat with us. Huge shout out to all the partners of this podcast. We have the Ozonix, Wasp, Lone Wolf, and Vortex Optics. Please go out, support the companies that support this podcast, and be sure to follow along on Instagram, Facebook. Please subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast. Other than that, we're going to keep the outro short. Be good to others. Be good to your neighbors. Send good vibes in. Send good vibes out. I can't even talk. Just be happy. Be nice. Be kind. We'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.